Well, welcome everyone again. Lovely to see everybody here this morning on this fine winter's morning as we look at the writing on the wall. Quite literally, really, when you consider that we have the marvels of modern technology here, of the overhead projection, which isn't really an overhead projector as such. It's more just a few TV screens and projectors. Let's start this morning. Of course, we're as I mentioned before, welcome to those online. We're doing the we're participating this morning with the winter series, online church series, where we're looking at lesser known biblical events for the month of June. But let's get started this morning, and we'll do some singing. So I'll hand it over to the worship band, and yeah, if you'd all like to stand up, I guess. Thanks, Lil.
Yes, thanks, Ben. If everyone would like to stand up, our first song for today is Lord, I Lift Your Name on High. When we're ready. Done, everyone. Our second song is How Deep the Father's Love for Us.
His dying breath out. death and resurrection. Why should I gain from his reward? I cannot give an answer, but this I know with all my heart, his wounds have paid my
beautiful singing, everyone. Our last song for now is Oh Praise the Name.
I cast my mind to Calvary, where Jesus fled.
Everyone, you can all take a seat.
Whew. Always great to get together and sing some praise to our great God, that's for sure. And yeah, thank you very much, worship band. That was great. I hope it came through okay online. Sometimes we forget to put the little thing on which says original sound for musicians, and so then it's like air guitar type of thing. We just, the musicians sit there, nobody can hear anything. But hopefully not today, which is good. I'm just going to quickly flick back because I put one here. So the online church series runs all year. Basically, we have a summer, you know, autumn, winter, spring series. It's put together by Rodney from Sydney, which is very much appreciated. And for winter this year, we're looking at lesser-known Bible events or lesser-known things from the Bible. So things like events that happen, people, lesser-known people, and, of course, places. We're going to finish up in August before we hit the spring series. If we look at what's on the schedule for June, though, or the program or the plan for June, we can see that last week we had James from Windsor gave us a presentation on Daniel's diet, and you can see a lot of the these first two weekends in June come from the book of Daniel. And today's, I guess, deep dive is a bit of a look at the writing on the wall, which is a very amazing little interlude, I guess, between, you know, the conquest or the Babylonian Empire and the Persian Empire that came afterwards. It's almost like it was at a pivotal point, at the point at which they changed, that this event happened, and it's recorded in the book of Daniel. And we'll have a look and just see how the finger of God was well and truly on all of this, these things that happened, and how he's the one, God is the one that sets up the kingdoms of this world and puts over it, as it says, the basest of men, which I thought was a very interesting way of looking at it. Mene, mene, tekel, euphason is, of course, the writing that was put on there, and which we'll have a look at what that actually means as we get into the chapter, and I'll show you what it actually looks like, as perhaps as it would have been written. I'm not sure whether it would have been written in Hebrew or whether it would have been written in Chaldean, or who knows. But before we get started this morning, Sunday school's moved out. That's great. I'll repeat the Lord's Prayer from Luke chapter 11, if you'd like to bow your heads. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, as in heaven, so in earth. Give us day by day our daily bread, and forgive us our sins, for we also forgive everyone that is indebted to us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. So as I said, this was sort of at the turning point, a turning point in history, a moment in history, and the book of Daniel records what happened in those last sort of moments. There is actually another book which is quite interesting. It's called the Cyrusopedia or Cyruspedia or something like that. Anyway, it's not, they don't know whether it's 100% official. It's got its own take on these things. Cyrus, of course, was the king of the Persian Empire. And there's actually quite a lot written about him in the Bible, which is interesting. But most people, I guess, even if you haven't heard of this particular event, you will have heard of the saying, the writing's on the wall. You know, like generally speaking, you would say that you can foresee that something, some impending doom is going to happen. And so you might say that, oh, the writing was on the wall for that company, or the writing was on the wall for that person as such, you know, because we can see that, you know, something bad's going to happen to them. So it's an idiom that that's come down, and this is the source, basically. It's coming from as many of our sayings in the Western world sort of do come from the Bible. This is one of those. So it's universally accepted to have originated from the story told in Daniel chapter 5. We're going to read Daniel chapter 5 shortly too. And it's the final divine act, prophesying the downfall of the Babylonian Empire. So let's have a little bit of a look at that. We know the Babylonian Empire came to its height under Nebuchadnezzar II. He was the one that actually conquered and destroyed Jerusalem. And he set up this amazing empire. And of course, Babylon, or the capital, is really what the empire is named after. And we'll see some stats on that in a minute, but it's no wonder. It was an amazing place. In fact, in later chapters, we see that there was Daniel actually had a vision that which spoke about a great image that was set up with a head of gold and all of those sorts of things. And the head of gold was the Babylonian Empire. And then, of course, it talked about the different empires that would come after that. So the year is 538 BC. We have the Babylonian Empire ruling most of the world, or maybe not so much. They've been losing ground to the Persians all over the place. The Persians with the Medes, of course, which kind of the Persians took over. They've been winning in a lot of places, winning battles in a lot of places. Belshazzar, the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, he's a renowned warrior, and he's actually more or less the ruler of the kingdom, because his father, I don't know, I didn't look up how to say this one, Nabonidus, sounds like a disease, doesn't it? Anyway, he's actually the king. And so Belshazzar, who is a renowned warrior, is actually ruling in his stead, because he actually spent a lot of time apparently away from his kingdom, this other fellow. So the Persians are knocking on the door of, as the Cyrus-opedia puts it, they had the city of Babylon besieged, which is amazing considering the size of it. Anyway, and Belshazzar, being overly confident, decides that he's going to hold an enormous feast. And in this feast, he calls for all of the goblets and things that were taken out of the house of God at Jerusalem, the temple in Jerusalem. And basically, he uses those cups to, praise the name of all these other gods, which is sacrilege, basically. It's a terrible thing. And in the middle of all of this, a hand appears and starts writing on the wall, writes four words on the wall, and you can see it there on the right, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. And you'll see how the king reacts to that in a moment when we read through. But let's have a bit of look at the city of Babylon. The city of Babylon was absolutely huge. It was, I don't know whether it was the biggest city of the ancient world, but it was enormous. 10 kilometers by 10 kilometers. So to give you an idea, from here to Gosford is maybe 7 kilometers, I guess, from here. From down at Terrigal, if you go Terrigal to Gosford, that's about 10 kilometres, right? So nothing but city and walls from Terrigal all the way to Gosford, and then the same again in the opposite direction in a giant square. It's said that the brick wall that surrounded the kingdom was 90 kilometres long, and it was 97 metres high. Now, this is Herodotus, who was a great historian that actually recorded this. 97 metres high is really high. I don't know that it would have been that high. But needless to say that Belshazzar was pretty confident. Oh, you hear the rumble of the bikes outside. It was 24 metres thick, and then had another wall inside of that, which was 23 metres behind the first wall. So even if you breached the outer city wall, then you still were stuck in between one great big wall and the next one. So, you know, it was very, very well defended. It had 250 towers that were supposedly 137 metres high, which is huge. The wall went down 10 metres as well under the ground. The Euphrates River went through the middle of it, and they had a 800 metre or almost a kilometre long bridge with a drawbridge on it, which closed at night. So an army, you can imagine, trying to attack a city like this would have had their work cut out for them. It would have been very, very hard. It has, of course, the Hanging Gardens in it, which is one of the wonders of the ancient world. There is actually a theory that potentially the Hanging Gardens were actually made out of the remnants of the Tower of Babel, believe it or not. But anyway, that's another side note. 8 massive gates and 100 brass gates. Streets were paved with pavers, basically. They had stone slabs that were 1 meter in square. And believe it or not, where they have actually found the site of Babylon, they've found the remnants of these streets there. So everything is still, it might be buried and things like that, but they found the walls, they found, basically it's quite incredible that here we are many thousands of years later and there's still remnants of this enormous city. Great temples, of course, as you would expect to these heathen gods. Baal, Ishtar, Marduk, which is Baal. But anyway, things like a golden image of Baal. Now, Baal, of course, was a great calf, an enormous calf. And it was a terrible god that they used to do things like sacrifice children to and things like that. That's pretty awful. But it weighed 20. It's said to have had 25 tons of gold in it, which is pretty amazing. Anyway, and Nebuchadnezzar's palace was considered to be the most magnificent building that was ever erected on earth. So this guy had everything. It's no wonder that he was seen to be the empire of all empires. So what went wrong? That's the question. Well, we saw that in 605, the first conquest of Jerusalem happened. That's not when they destroyed it completely. It's when the Babylonians first came and raided it, basically. At that time, they took a lot of the young princes and some of the rulers. So the way the Babylonian Empire would work is they would go into a place and they would take all of their best people and they would bring them back and they would train them up under their, with the knowledge of the Chaldeans sort of thing. And so they were not just collecting wealth from all of these countries, but they were collecting the best minds of the place as well. So, as I say, Daniel was educated by the Chaldeans and of course, we know the story where Daniel actually interprets a dream for Nebuchadnezzar and, of course, is set up to be in one of the highest offices of the land. He witnessed Nebuchadnezzar's downfall. Basically, we know, for those who know the story, Nebuchadnezzar was warned. He was warned that if he didn't pull his head in and recognize that God had actually given him this kingdom, that he would, ultimately lose it. And not long after that, that's exactly what happened. It says that Nebuchadnezzar was walking in his palace and thinking, look at this great city that I've made and this great empire which I have set up. And at that moment, he was struck with madness. He became crazy. But, of course, he recovered from that after 7 years, I think it was, or it says 7 times passed over him. Interestingly, after that, Daniel fades out of the picture for a bit. If you look at on the right-hand side, you can see that Nebuchadnezzar, of course, is the second king that's mentioned there. It's a little bit blurry, I know. But you can see that there was several other kings that reigned after Nebuchadnezzar. Evil Merodach, I think that's just his name. I don't know if he was actually evil. He probably was. But Nergalissar, and then Nabonidus, that guy that we're talking about today. And then, of course, I missed out the other Marduk guy. The character today that's mentioned is Belshazzar. And so when Belshazzar talks about his father, King Nebuchadnezzar, he's actually talking about his grandfather. And basically Daniel, who was set up in this highest office in one of these very high offices under Nebuchadnezzar, is more or less forgotten. And cast aside by the looks of it, to the point where Belshazzar doesn't even know who he was. It's actually the queen or his mother that actually comes and says, You remember this guy? He was well known. Anyway. So he interprets these writings which are on the wall for Belshazzar, and then which tells about the imminent downfall of the kingdom of Babylon. So let's have a quick look at, we're going to read through Daniel chapter 5 now that I've given you all of that insight in the story. Hopefully I haven't given too much away. And anyway, we'll have a look. Daniel chapter 5, verse 1. Belshazzar, the king, made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before the 1,000. Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar, remember his grandfather, had taken out of the temple which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives and his concubines might drink therein. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God which was at Jerusalem, and the kings and his princes, his wives and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, of brass, iron, of wood and of stone. Just stop there for a sec. It's interesting. I don't know. My grandparents had a video that we used to watch up at their place. I know I'm interrupting the chapter here. Sorry. And interestingly, and it retells this particular story. It was a cartoon. Tim might remember it. Anyway, and they actually, in it, they praise the gods of gold and silver, and it's actually saying, and they have them saying, praise the god of gold and silver and brass and iron. I don't know that that's really what they would have been saying. It probably would have been that these things were made out of gold and silver and brass and iron and wood and stone, right? So, you know, it would have been just the Ishtars and Baals and things that were made out of those things. Anyway, that's a side note. In the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance was changed and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his loins were loosed. That's a real King James way of saying he wet his pants. And his knees smote one against another. Yeah, he's pretty upset. You can hear it. The king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. And the king spake and said to the wise men of Babylon, "Whosoever shall read this writing and show me the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about his neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." I had often wondered why it was the third ruler. But when you think about the fact that he was actually sort of only the king by, or the king that was standing in for his father, then there would have been the guy that sounds like an affliction, Nebuchadnezzar or whatever his name is, then Belshazzar, and then, of course, whoever it was that interpreted this dream. So third ruler, right? So the next guy next to him. Then came in all the king's wise men, and they could not read the writing, nor make known to the king the interpretation thereof. Then was the king Belshazzar greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonished. Now the queen, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banquet house. So notice she actually wasn't invited to this banquet by the looks of it, but she heard that the king was having some trouble, so she goes to see what her son needs. And the queen spake and said, "O king, live forever. Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed. There is a man in thy kingdom, in whom is the spirit of the holy gods, and in the days of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him, whom the king, Nebuchadnezzar, thy father," the king, I say, "thy father," interesting, she says it twice, "made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers, forasmuch as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams and the showing of hard sentences and dissolving of doubts were found in the same Daniel whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called and he will show the interpretation." That's a pretty good introduction, really. She didn't just say, I know a guy. she said, he does all of these things. He is all of these things and was all of these things to Nebuchadnezzar. Anyway, so Belshazzar comes across to me as a bit of, you know, he's just a bit ignorant by the sounds of it. He has no, he's paid no regard to what came before him. 13. Then was Daniel brought in before the king, and the king spake and said unto Daniel, art thou that Daniel which art of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king my father brought out of Jury? I have even heard of thee, that the spirit of the gods is in thee, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing and make known unto me the interpretation thereof. But they could not show the interpretation of the thing. And I have heard of thee, that thou canst make interpretations and dissolve doubts. Now if thou canst read the writing and make known to me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about thy neck and shalt be the third ruler in the kingdom. Then Daniel answered and said before the king, let thy gifts be to thyself and give thy rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing unto the king and make known to him the interpretation. You get the impression that Daniel didn't think much of this guy, to the point where he said, I'm not interested in your gifts. You know, you've obviously paid no heed to anything else. You're the one who's gotten us in this situation where the Persians are knocking on the front door. It's, I'll tell you what it says. O thou king, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations and languages trembled and feared before him. Whom he would, he slew. And whom he would, he kept alive. And whom he would, he set up. And whom he would, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up and his mind hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. And he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beasts, and his dwelling was with the wild asses. They fed him with grass like the oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointeth over it whomsoever he will. So that's, he's basically recounting what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. And now the charge. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this, but hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives and thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and the gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know. And the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified? Then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written. And this is the writing that was written, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin. This is the interpretation of the thing, Mene. God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Perez, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet and put a chain of gold about his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. In that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain, and Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. Now, that's the end of the chapter. I'd like you to think about that for a minute, right? The city of Babylon was 10 kilometers, you know, in length and breadth, right? They were already having a great big banquet, so goodness knows how late it was. And yet, in the hours of the night that remained, somebody managed to get into the imperial palace and actually kill the king. Obviously, there was a great battle already raging around the city or even in the city. And this guy, Belshazzar, is throwing a great big party in complete denial of everything else that's going on around him. And I think it's really interesting that obviously he either had no idea or he was too puffed up with pride to think that the Babylonian Empire could ever be overcome. And that's what Daniel's saying here. Even Nebuchadnezzar, who set it up, had to learn that God is the one that sets all these things in motion and gives the power to whom he will. So, mene mene tekel upharsin. Interesting that there's a difference in the name there. It's actually between upharsin and Perez, as in the interpretation there. It's actually just, it's a play on words, believe it or not. There is also some other things to say about what was actually written, that somehow that, if you look at, that it adds up to in the currency of the time, the shekels or whatever, the Jewish currency, that statement added up to 62, and it just happened to be that Darius was 62 years old when he took it. Anyway, I don't know. I don't think that's very interesting. But anyway, one thing I thought was very interesting, though, is there's actually a few times when the finger of the divine finger of authority, I guess you could say, has actually come in and pronounced either judgment or mercy or given some sort of a direct injection, I guess you could say, of its will into our earthly affairs here. Exodus 31:18 talks about the Ten Commandments, about the commandments written on tablets of stone, and they were truth and instruction that was given to the Israelites. And it was said that the tablets were written by the finger of God, right? Daniel 5, of course, we have, you know, the judgment of Babylon, which was, of course, written on the wall, which I thought was interesting, where Ten Commandments were written on the, I guess, the very rocks of the earth type of thing, something that was set in stone, as it's been said before. Whereas in this case, the judgment's been written on the constructions of men. I thought that was a very interesting parallel there. And so we know that this writing was all about judgment being pronounced upon the kingdom of the Babylonian kingdom. And then, of course, in the New Testament, we have Jesus, who's actually stoops down when somebody brings somebody, a lady who has been caught in the very act of adultery, who, according to the law of Moses, was said to needed to be stoned. Jesus stoops down and starts writing with his finger, as it says, in the dust of the earth. And I think it's interesting that it, of course, you know, you could say, oh yeah, well, the dust was there, of course he's going to write in that. But we know that we are made from the dust of the earth. We are, it says, whereas the grass that grows up and then perishes, we are a very, very, I guess, pitiful part of this world, where we were made for bigger things, made for better things, and yet through the corruption that came and the corruption that continues in this world, we have, as it says, like all, we have like sheep gone astray and turned to our own way. And Jesus sees that, and he actually sees this woman who's made this mistake, and he shows mercy on her. And I thought there's kind of a bit of a story going on there, really, isn't there? But anyway, that was, I thought, just an interesting sort of a side note. Now, you've been listening to me for long enough, I think. Let's have a hymn. Now, this is hymn 21, because I like hymn 21, to the tune of hymn 6, if that's all right, Tim. Just to mix it up a bit. As thirst the heart for cooling streams when in the sun of scorching ray, so Israel panteth now for him who holds them up from day to day. Oh, thanks then. Oh, sin is gone. Lift up the souls that they arise as on the wings of eagles fly. They hope in God, who hears their cries, for He is with them and I. Oh, let them now proclaim His praise, that they may now be with Him one, that with their God through endless days they may sit with Him on His throne.
We came across that hymn, I don't know, a few weeks ago now. And I liked the words so much, I thought we should sing it again. And I thought hymn number 6 has a great tune. And I thought, well, let's try and mix it up and see if we can get, something that a tune that we know really well and some words which are fantastic. All right. Speaking about the writing on the wall, as I mentioned before, it's become an idiom in our days, or a saying, basically, which talks about prophesying impending doom and things like that. And I thought, you can't really talk about impending doom without looking at Matthew chapter 24. Because Jesus in Matthew 24 goes and tells his disciples all about the end of the world and what's going to happen and all of these sorts of things. And there's a lot of verses in it. I thought, we're not going to have time to read the whole of Matthew 24 today. But I thought it would be worthwhile just taking an excerpt from verses 42 to 44. And Jesus here is talking about his return, the end of the world, and people being ready for that time. So let's read it. Matthew 24:42. Watch therefore, for you know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched, and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not the Son of Man cometh. They're pretty sobering sort of words, I think, really. And it gives us a real indication as to the reason why, even when you look at the New Testament, the disciples lived with this expectation that Jesus was going to return at any time. I don't think they actually knew that it was going to roll on for another, almost 2,000 years after Jesus had been taken up from the earth. And so I think really, it gives us an idea that really that's the way that we should be living as well, the way we should be thinking as well. Sure, we've got a plan, like things in this world are going to go on for hundreds of years. That's just good stewardship. That's fine. But we need to live our lives in such a way that we believe Jesus would be happy to find us when he returns. Now, I wanted to have a bit of a think about the kingdom of Babylon and its downfall. You know, I thought it was quite interesting that, so Nebuchadnezzar didn't have if we go back to Nebuchadnezzar and his crazy episode, we'll call it, he didn't have a kingdom, he didn't have another army that was going to be taking the kingdom from him at that point. Perhaps God knew his heart that he would actually be turned. And we can see that after he had his sanity returned to him, that Nebuchadnezzar actually turned around and actually wrote a great big decree that said, I now recognize that the kingdoms of this world are given to God, they are actually established by God and given to whoever he desires or determines should rule them for his purpose. Things are done in accordance to God's plans. Now, what's interesting is that in a very short time period after that revelation that came to Nebuchadnezzar, I guess, that Daniel, who was like a super duper bigwig and did all these amazing things for Nebuchadnezzar, was completely forgotten. This guy who could interpret dreams, who was obviously a ruler in the city and in the kingdom of Babylon, that he was more or less, it got to the point where Belshazzar didn't even know who he was, and the queen, who was obviously maybe, in that generation directly after Nebuchadnezzar, she actually had to remind him. And I got thinking about that, and I thought, it reminds me a little bit of Western civilization. Western civilization has been built upon Christianity, upon Christian values, and established by Christian men and women for centuries. It's risen to be the powerhouse that it is. It is an amazing kingdom, you could say. I was just talking with Nadia about it last night, and it was interesting that there's actually a railroad now that connects China all the way to Iran, which means that in that Central Asia block now, this sort of people who are not really part of the Western world, right, they can actually trade, do whatever they want, independent of Western civilization, United States, Australia, Britain, that sort of thing, all of the Western countries, they can't control any of that. Most of the time, not if it goes by land, because a lot of the blockades and sanctions and things like that have always been upheld by naval fleets and things like that. So to block these trades and keep this other part of the world, the eastern part of the world, under control, I guess you could say. But what we're seeing is that Western civilization is a little bit like the kingdom of Babylon, in that it was truly great. Western civilization was really an amazing, we've endured peace and prosperity in Western civilization that is, not equal any time in the history of the world, to the point where we consider all of these talks or these rumors of wars and things like that to be something that are very far away and they don't really have anything to do with us. But just like the kingdom or the empire of Babylon, if we forget that it is God that establishes these things, if we don't remember what our grandfathers knew, for example, if we don't look to what established our great nations and things like that, we too are in danger. God basically, yes, he will look after the individual. He will look after his people. But I think the thing to remember is that, just as Daniel said, Nebuchadnezzar had to learn that God is the one that sets up the kingdoms of this world. And he's the one who will put make a nation successful. We can't do these things of ourselves. I think really when one of the greatest fallacies I think that we can embrace as individuals and also as countries and things like that is to think that we can do it all ourselves and that sort of thing. Because at the end of the day, we can only do so much in our own power. And I think that's kind of really gets its parallel from even our Christian life. So if we in our Christianity decide that we are going to be good, because that's what it says we need to be, we're still going to miss it. Our attitude and our reason for being good has to be to glorify God. Everything that we do needs to be
for the glory of God. We have to recognize that as long as we're trying to do things in our own steam, while we're trying to establish our own salvation, I guess you could say, then establish our own salvation, we're going to miss it. Just like the Jews missed it back in Jesus' day. They had all of the instructions. They did all of the rituals. They did everything that they should have done. Jesus turned up and they didn't even recognize him. He was the one that was supposed to be the embodiment of everything they were doing, and they didn't even recognize him. And I think it's quite interesting when you look at the way that Jesus knocked a couple of things on the head when he was, you know, walking around, whether it be things, you know, to do with, you know, even mercy, as it said, as in that example there with the adulterous woman. You know, also statements like, it's not what goes into a man that defiles him, it's what comes out of him, you know, like things like that. You know, Jesus had this way of looking at things which was revolutionary at the time. And we as Christians have enjoyed that, I think, which has been good. But I think the thing is that if we can kind of put those two together, there will be a new kingdom coming. It'll be a kingdom that is ruled by Jesus Christ. It'll be a kingdom that'll be worth being in. It'll be a time when, as it says, you know, all the violence will cease, the lion will lie down with the lamb, all of these sorts of things that we read about in the Bible, a time that we can't even imagine is coming. Maybe the writing's on the wall for the Western civilization. Maybe the fullnesses of the Gentiles are almost come in. That's one of the things that Paul says in Romans. He says, blindness in part has happened unto Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles become in. Maybe what we're seeing is we're seeing the end of that Western civilization, and maybe we're seeing the turning point at which we'll see something beginning to happen. I'm not one of these. I'm not going to say, you know, this is definitely it, this is definitely happening and things like that. But I'm living in expectation. Just as the disciples were, I'm living in expectation that Jesus will be coming again soon. And we see lots and lots of descriptions, I guess you could say. We talked about last weekend, I talked about the prescriptive and the descriptive plan. The prescriptive being that things will happen in this order. The descriptive being this is kind of what it's going to look like. A lot of prophecies are done in a descriptive format because the poor old guy who's looking at the prophecy has no idea what he's looking at. You know, you imagine him looking at cars, for example, or looking at, you know, fighter jets, or looking at, you know, these, you know, they didn't know any of those sorts of things. But I think the interesting thing is there's quite, it's prescribed that there will be certain things that will happen at the world's end. And one of those things, as it says, and so Israel will be saved. We know that Jesus will return again, and we know that there is a promise for those people that will be identified as Israel at that time to have a work done in them. And we believe that that will be the overcoming of all of the evil, sin, and death even, which is a pretty amazing promise. So, I don't know. It's worthwhile. It's kind of good to. It's good to know that the that we can look to these examples, where these cataclysmic events, these events where we have somebody throwing a great big party and the writing happening on the wall, and then there's a change of empire like overnight. We can look at that and we can go, that's how quickly these things can happen. But and I'm not saying that's going to necessarily happen within our, you know, in the next day or so or anything like that or nothing like that. But it's certainly worthwhile living your life with the expectation that those promises that are in the Bible are going to be fulfilled in our generation. That would be a wonderful thing. Anyway, let's finish this morning, and we'll have another song. It's an old one, and I'll have the worship band up. Sorry, Millie.
Thanks, Ben. Well, if you'd all like to stand up, we'll sing our last song, which is This Kingdom.
this kingdom comes. Jesus, redemption sacrifice. Now glorified, now justified, this kingdom comes. And this kingdom.
Well done. Okay, that's great. Well, thanks everyone for joining this morning. I hope you enjoyed this story as much as I did looking into it. Next week, of course, the online series will continue, but not from here. We'll have a local service as well. But yeah, anyway, just the reminder for the week, watch therefore, for you know not what hour your Lord doth come. Have a great week, everyone, and we'll see you all again soon.